At 11 o'clock next morning, my friend and I were walking up the famous Yew Avenue of Holderness Hall. We were ushered through the magnificent Elizabethan doorway and into His Grace's study. There we found Mr. James Wilder, demure and courtly, but with some trace of that wild terror of the night before still lurking in his furtive eyes and in his twitching features. "You have come to see His Grace? I am sorry, but the fact is that the Duke is far from well. He has been very much upset by the tragic news. We received a telegram from Dr. Huxtable yesterday afternoon, which told us of your discovery." "I must see the Duke, Mr. Wilder." "But he is in his room." "Then I must go to his room." "I believe he is in his bed." "I will see him there." Holmes' cold and inexorable manner showed the secretary that it was useless to argue with him. "Very good, Mr. Holmes. I will tell him that you are here." After an hour's delay, the great nobleman appeared. His face was more cadaverous than ever, his shoulders had rounded, and he seemed to be an altogether older man than he had been the morning before. He greeted us with a stately courtesy and seated himself at his desk, his red beard streaming down on the table. "Well, Mr. Holmes," said he. But my friend's eyes were fixed upon the secretary, who stood by his master's chair. "I think, Your Grace, that I could speak more freely in Mr. Wilder's absence." The man turned a shade paler and cast a malignant glance at Holmes. "If Your Grace wishes." "Yes, yes, you had better go. Now, Mr. Holmes, what have you to say?" My friend waited until the door had closed behind the retreating secretary. "The fact is, Your Grace," said he, "that my colleague, Dr. Watson, and myself had an assurance from Dr. Huxtable that a reward had been offered in this case. I should like to have this confirmed from your own lips."
"Certainly, Mr. Holmes."
"It amounted, if I am correctly informed, to £5,000 to anyone who will tell you where your son is."
"Exactly."
"And another £1,000 to the man who will name the person or persons who keep him in custody."
"Exactly."
"Under the latter heading is included, no doubt, not only those who may have taken him away, but also those who conspire to keep him in his present position."
"Yes, yes," cried the Duke impatiently. "If you do your work well, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, you will have no reason to complain of niggardly treatment."
My friend rubbed his thin hands together with an appearance of avidity which was a surprise to me, who knew his frugal tastes. "I fancy that I see Your Grace's cheque-book upon the table," said he. "I should be glad if you would make me out a cheque for £6,000. It would be as well, perhaps, for you to cross it. The Capital and Counties Bank, Oxford Street Branch, are my agents." His Grace sat very stern and upright in its chair and looked stonily at my friend.
"Is this a joke, Mr. Holmes? It is hardly a subject for pleasantry."
"Not at all, Your Grace. I was never more earnest in my life."
"What do you mean, then?"
"I mean that I have earned the reward. I know where your son is, and I know some, at least, of those who are holding him." The Duke's beard had turned more aggressively red than ever against his ghastly white face.
"Where is he?" he gasped.
"He is, or was last night, at the Fighting Cock Inn, about 2 miles from your park gate." The Duke fell back in his chair.
"And whom do you accuse?"
Sherlock Holmes' answer was an astounding one. He stepped swiftly forward and touched the Duke upon the shoulder. "I accuse you," said he. "And now, Your Grace, I'll trouble you for that check." Never shall I forget the Duke's appearance as he sprang up and clawed with his hands like one who is sinking into an abyss. Then, with an extraordinary effort of aristocratic self-command, he sat down and sank his face in his hands. It was some minutes before he spoke.
"How much do you know?" he asked at last, without raising his head.
"I saw you together last night."
"Does anyone else beside your friend know?"
"I have spoken to no one." The Duke took a pen in his quivering fingers and opened his cheque-book.
"I shall be as good as my word, Mr. Holmes. I am about to write your cheque, however unwelcome the information which you have gained may be to me. When the offer was first made, I little thought the turn which events might take. But you and your friend are men of discretion, Mr. Holmes."
"I hardly understand Your Grace."
"I must put it plainly, Mr. Holmes. If only you two know of this incident, there is no reason why it should go any farther. I think £12,000 is the sum that I owe you, is it not?" But Holmes smiled and shook his head. "I fear, Your Grace, that matters can hardly be arranged so easily. There is the death of this schoolmaster to be accounted for."
"But James knew nothing of that. You cannot hold him responsible for that. It was the work of this brutal ruffian whom he had the misfortune to employ."
"I must take the view, Your Grace, that when a man embarks upon a crime, he is morally guilty of any other crime which may spring from it."
"Morally, Mr. Holmes, no doubt you are right. But surely not in the eyes of the law. A man cannot be condemned for a murder at which he was not present, and which he loathes and abhors as much as you do. The instant that he heard of it, he made a complete confession to me, so filled was he with horror and remorse. He lost not an hour in breaking entirely with the murderer. Oh, Mr. Holmes, you must save him. You must save him. I tell you that you must save him."
The Duke had dropped the last attempt at self-command, and was pacing the room with a convulsed face and with his clenched hands raving in the air. At last he mastered himself and sat down once more at his desk.
"I appreciate your conduct in coming here before you spoke to anyone else," said he. "At least we may take counsel how far we can minimize this hideous scandal."
"Exactly," said Holmes. "I think, Your Grace, that this can only be done by absolute frankness between us. I am disposed to help Your Grace to the best of my ability, but in order to do so, I must understand to the last detail how the matter stands. I realize that your words applied to Mr. James Wilder, and that he is not the murderer."
"No, the murderer has escaped."
Sherlock Holmes smiled demurely. "Your Grace can hardly have heard of any small reputation which I possess, or you would not imagine that it is so easy to escape me. Mr. Reuben Hayes was arrested at Chesterfield, on my information, at 11 o'clock last night. I had the telegram from the head of the local police before I left the school this morning." The Duke leaned back in his chair and stared with amazement at my friend.
"You seem to have powers that are hardly human," said he. "So, Reuben Hayes is taken? I am right glad to hear it, if it will not react upon the fate of James."
"Your secretary?"
"No, sir, my son."
It was Holmes' turn to look astonished.